Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. This is your host, Ron Jacobs, here on a sunny day in Redmond, which is pretty rare, okay, but we're sacrificing to be here in the studio today for you. And I'm joined by Anurag Pandit. And welcome, Anurag.
Thanks, Ron.
Now, tell me what you're doing.
So I work on the WCF discovery product in the .NET 4.0 framework.
Ah, okay. Now, viewers of Endpoint TV have seen the video that I made based on a hands-on lab that you wrote, and I tweaked a little bit, but the Service Discovery Lab, which was really fun. We built this chat wow, I called it, application. But I wanted to talk to you today because there's a lot going on in discovery, and I just wanted to get a gist of it. So, you know, let's go back to the beginning, though. Why build Service Discovery?
So one of the problems that's inherent in any distributed application or in general what's common as the application infrastructure is that there are lots of different components and they need to talk to each other. The components can be anything, right? If you're talking about an enterprise environment, there are services that someone's built. If you're talking about the home environment, there are devices or there are applications, you know. Any automated, so your printer is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. And all these applications need to talk to each other. And
right.
When they talk to each other, you get a lot of benefit out of it. And discovery, so the critical part is how do they, if you want them to talk to each other, you can either configure them with their endpoints or whatever the locations are, or you can dynamically find them. I mean, if you configure them, you can see the obvious problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your printer moved from one port to another, or you know, your router shut down and it assigned a new IP address, and boom, your printer, that address that you had configured is no longer working, right?
Right.
Similar problems in enterprise applications, right? I have a service that went down, came back up, it's got a different endpoint or different address, and now it's no longer working. So so when we started creating the discovery product, it was really to solve this problem, which is how do you make all these pieces work together? How do you add value to this application infrastructure by providing discovery to users?
So you want to have this kind of dynamic environment. After
yes.
all, that's what the world is really like,
yep.
right? I mean, yeah, it was on that server. Oh, that one blew up. We moved it to this server.
Exactly.
You know, you just want the apps to keep working. Now, this is based on a protocol, though, that's been around for a few years, right? The WS Discovery protocol,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So give me in a nutshell, you know, so there was two modes we talked about in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
There was the ad hoc discovery and the managed discovery. Let's talk about ad hoc discovery. How does that work?
So, okay. So ad hoc discovery is based on UDP multicast. In this mode of operation, which you're talking about, which you're thinking about your clients discovering applications that are on your same network, right?
On the same subnet.
Same subnet,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
And what happens is a client will send a discovery request out. There are two kinds of discovery requests that it can send out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's when it sends that out, it's going to be sent to a multicast address. The protocol, the discovery protocol, defines this multicast address. So by standard, if you're conforming to this protocol, it'll send it out to the standard UDP multicast address, which services can also be listening to. So your packet is multicast out. A bunch of services will receive it. It's a UDP packet, so there's transmission loss can happen.
Mm-hmm.
The same guarantees associated with the UDP transport. When a service picks it up, and if it has discovery enabled, it can respond back to the client directly. And that's exactly how UDP or ad hoc discovery works. There's no centralization, no nothing.
Right. So if I got my little chat application
mm-hmm.
and it says, all right, let me find some services, and it goes out multicast, a lot of services might respond, right? So now, from my point of view, when I enabled this in my service, right? So I just wrote a little bit of code that you're gonna tell me, hey, we got a response from this one, from that one, or so forth. So you're gonna tell me about all of them, and then my client can just choose whichever one.
Yeah, and there's twists to that too, right? A client can search for all services. In
mm-hmm.
that case, you're gonna get the chat wow service. You're gonna
mm-hmm.
get chat wow services. You're gonna get printer services. There's a whole bunch of services already that respond to discovery protocols, right?
Okay.
And you'll get, all of them will respond back to you, right? The client can also be a little bit more smart about this, where the client can say, oh, I don't really care about all these services, so I don't want them to respond back to me, so I'll provide a type, right?
Okay.
It's a standard WCF type, your name's...
It's the contract, right?
Yes, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So type defines a contract.
Okay.
We'll get into, well, ignoring the semantics.
Yeah.
But so you provide your type. So you're looking for services of type ChatWow.
Mm-hmm.
And you specify that when you're sending your discovery probe message out, which is
okay.
part of your find request, right?
Right.
And then all the services that get it will see in this discovery message, there'll be a field, right? And they'll know that, oh, the client is only looking for service of this type.
Yeah.
And they'll know if they understand that contract or not. And if they don't, they won't respond back. And if they do, they will. So then in that case, only your ChatWow services will respond back. And now the client has a collection of ChatWow services that it can choose to either connect to one, connect to many, do whatever it wants.
Okay, so on the client side, I wrote a little bit of code to do this, but on this, as far as the service goes,
mm-hmm.
you just had to configure this behavior, this service discovery behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just add yourself into the WCF stack, if you will, right, and start listening for these probe messages?
You don't have to do anything other than adding the service discovery behavior, which kicks off the internally, it'll kick off the discovery service for you.
Right.
And then you have to provide a system endpoint where the discovery service can listen for messages. And this is where the mode of operation comes in, right?
Okay.
Because you provided, one thing that you did in your lab in the services, you provided an endpoint.
Right, right.
And the endpoint was, I believe, of kind UDP discovery.
Okay.
Right? It was a UDP discovery endpoint. And what that does, so I can talk a little bit about standard endpoints because it was really nicely, concisely defined in one line. But what that did was, it told the service discovery service that it should listen for discovery messages conforming to a specific contract
okay.
at a particular UDP multicast endpoint conforming to a UDP binding.
All right, right. So the beauty of this, though, is that because this was all spelled out in the standard, right, I mean, it should be interoperable, right? If somebody is not using WCF, but using something else that supports discovery, it should be able to find this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. All right, so then the other thing that AdHoc did was the announcements, right? So like hello and goodbye. I kind of said in the video, this is like when you come to a party, you know, you walk in the door, you say like, hey, everybody, I'm here. And then when you leave, you say goodbye.
Yep.
See, and people may or may not hear you. They might be busy, but, you know, it's the best effort, right?
Exactly, and that's the model. I want to actually touch up, you mentioned interoperability, and I want to stress that point too, because we're going through, we're putting our best effort in getting this protocol standardized, because if it's not standardized, then it's very hard for other implementers to implement it. And we want, you know, your devices, your laptop, or your printers, your projectors, to be able to have their own implementations of discovery, because the real use for this will come from if there's a wide ecosystem, right?
Oh, and so now I thought WS Discovery was a standard.
It's in the process of becoming a standard.
Oh, okay.
It's going through OSS, and I believe it's in a few community drafts have already been sent out, and I honestly don't know what the standardization schedule is.
Well, you know, that thing has been around for a while. I think the original was like 2004 or something like that.
So there was a version that was released. It was just a public release.
Yeah.
And now it's what we're actually going through the formal steps and going through standards.org, working with partners, mm-hmm. and the standard.org is, leading the standardization effort.
Yeah, so now the other thing I thought was kind of interesting was the ability to extend the metadata.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was imagining there's probably a lot of useful things you could do with this, right? You could add in, version information maybe if you didn't use the namespace or some other kind of custom thing that you wanted to include in the metadata.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, maybe you say you put in the, if we're using printers as an example, so you say, like, I'm an HP printer, so you want to put that in the metadata, so then your HP client software somehow finds only HP printers, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, there's several ways to do it. And the metadata really allows you to customize discovery
uh-huh.
to a very, very fine degree. So you can put anything you want in an XML as an XML element into mm-hmm. your discovery packets, right? And
yeah.
you customize your metadata per endpoint. So in the ChatWow application, we... the metadata that we sent across was the name.
Right.
Yeah. And the client can do anything with that information that it wants. Yeah, so the printer example, that's one great example. There's many ways to do it.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, this actually, when you think about it from just a consumer electronic point of view, there would be a lot of uses for this. Like, you know, I wish my TV would automatically see the DVD player and figure out how to talk to each other, or, you know, things like that. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff like that going on, right?
I would love that to happen too.
Yeah, it's just like way too hard to make this stuff work, you know. Yeah, so
I mean, in the ideal world, you have, you know, you plop your Xbox into your room and you just turn it on and it finds your TV and connects and everything, and all that happens behind the scenes and you don't have to worry about it. And we're the infrastructure piece that's helping you create that same behavior for your applications, whatever that you may be developing.
Well, you know, it's kind of like I travel a lot for Microsoft, right? As I got my laptop, and, you know, I might show up in the Microsoft office in Tokyo or, you know, Sydney or something. And if I've got a little client app and I walk through the door, my client app wants to talk to a web service. Now, when I'm here in Redmond, you know, it's right here. But if I'm in, I don't know, Sydney, and I want to connect, it's a long haul to get to this one. Maybe there's one local that would be better choice for me, right? This Discovery could find that.
Yes. This is something that we're considering. Uh-huh. And the scenario you described is actually is something that we're looking into. And it's not there
in the Beta 1 release?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's there, it has some limitations.
Okay.
But the idea is, what you said, actually, there's a really powerful scenario. I'm sitting at work, and I want to print a photo on my grandma's printer, who's in, you know, Japan.
Okay.
And you may not know what that printer is, but you should be able to discover that printer because you have a client that can connect to her machine and then send out a discovery request and be able to discover machines that are in, you know, different environments. And they're great, you know, besides the devices, there's also great enterprise solutions, or enterprise applications where discovery just becomes critical, right?
So in the second case, we talked about ad hoc discovery, which seemed to me was really useful for kind of that in the house, consumer electronics, or, you know, that sort of thing. Very location specific, but the managed discovery is kind of fun. And the way I thought of this with like the chat, like if I log into Windows Live Messenger or whatever, it's not doing ad hoc discovery to find other Messenger users near me. It goes and checks with the server somewhere, and it doesn't do discovery probably anyway.
No.
But it goes and logs into a server, it looks up who my friends are, it tells me who's online, that sort of stuff. But I imagine sort of a similar idea behind managed discovery, right? Instead of just talking to whoever, I'm going to talk to a specific managed proxy. It's going to tell me about stuff, right?
Exactly. And and that helps you do a lot of other things, too. Like, you can create an infrastructure of these discovery proxies that can span networks, right? And so one of the things is, how do you find a discovery proxy?
Yeah.
Right? You can have a discovery proxy in every subnet that you have, and then have all those discovery proxies linked together, and then you have this this really powerful mixed mode system where you can send out a multicast request that finds your discovery proxy, and that discovery proxy, and then you connect to that discovery proxy and find the service you're looking for. It can be anywhere, and the discovery, because there's an infrastructure of discovery proxies that you've built. You're able to find the service that's located somewhere else, you know, like let's say in a server farm or something.
Yeah.
Because all these services are registered with the proxy.
And then the proxies, now, I found this a little bit confusing at first, but then I thought more about it. I think I got it. Now, in the lab, we built a discovery proxy, and it's also listening for announcements, right? So when a ChatWow client comes up, the discovery proxy hears it and adds it to its list.
Yep.
But there's nothing that says that it has to do announcements. I mean, it could get its list from anything, right? It could read it off a database, an XML file, or you know, whatever, right?
Yep.
Okay, so, I mean, because what I was thinking is a lot of enterprises have invested in different kinds of registries for services, or they may have a database or UDDI or something, and they might want to tie in their discovery proxy into some kind of registry to know where things are.
And that was one of the defining principles in designing the proxy-based classes that we did. Right? So I want to kind of clarify, we don't provide a proxy, but we provide ways for you to easily build one.
Right.
And how you build one is you just extend the discovery proxy-based class. Once you do that, you get all this discovery magic on top for you, and then you can extend the methods that are required to do whatever the specific discovery functionality is, such as responding to find messages and responding to announcements. And one of the things your proxy could do that you created yourself is connect to a database, pull all that list in, and populate that. Or if a find message comes in, the discovery proxy can directly connect to the database, look through that services, and get that service, and then respond back for you.
Yeah.
So it's really easy. We made it really easy for you to connect whatever else you may have underneath and just put a discovery head on top of it.
Ah, okay. So now the next thing, of course, people are going to say is, all right, look, I'm building my application. I go into Visual Studio. I right-click, say add service reference. It's going to generate up this nice proxy for me. What I'd really like is for that proxy to not just use the hard-coded address that I added when I was building it, but to dynamically find the endpoint, the service that I'm looking for. Do you support that?
I'll just repeat the scenario. You have a discovery proxy that came up, or you want to find a service through add service reference?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about, like, I'm building the client app, right?
Okay, got it.
Service is out there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I say add service reference, it says give me the WSDL address, I put that in, go, yep, that's my service, and I generate the proxy. Now the experience prior to this was I get a proxy, has a hard-coded address, my
yes.
service is that one, right? And so a lot of people, the first thing they do is rip that up, write a bunch of custom code to go, read the service out of something else or find it or whatever. But the discovery is going to do some of this for you, right?
So there isn't a very tight integration between that, between the add service reference functionality and discovery. So when you do add service reference, you're actually going to get the endpoint of the particular service whose WSDL you got.
Yeah.
You're right. What that does is that does tie you down to that particular service.
Yeah.
What you can do is there's several ways where you can modify your client just a little bit,
okay,
so that it can find that service dynamically.
Okay.
Right? One of the ways we make it really easy for you to do it is substitute a dynamic endpoint into your client. So when you're revving up your client, instead of passing a particular endpoint, just pass in the dynamic endpoint, which, like other endpoints, will take in the contract description of the service that whose reference you added and the binding that you are going to use to connect to that service anyway.
Okay. So now this is for people who don't speak WCF.
Right.
There's actually a class, an endpoint class, right, mm-hmm. for that WCF has. So you have a class called Dynamic Endpoint?
We have a class called Dynamic Endpoint.
Okay. So when I'm newing up my service, I'm going to have to supply, an address with the endpoint or Dynamic Endpoint. So if I give it Dynamic Endpoint, then you're going to do your magic and look it up for me.
Yeah, from a client end, when you're trying to generate a client based on an endpoint, if you specify dynamic endpoint, which lives in the system.service model, that discovery namespace.
Okay.
We'll new up a discovery client for you, which will go and find the we'll go and find the service and then populate the address and put that address back in, and so that your client can connect to it based on that address.
Okay, so in Visual Studio 2010, mm-hmm. .NET 4, Beta 1, mm-hmm. the only way you can do this is by doing this in code, right? But in the future, you're talking about making it possible to do even with config.
So, yeah, we already have great configuration support, and we want to improve that even more, yeah.
Okay.
So you can do a lot currently through config. So for example, making a service discoverable, you don't need to touch your service code. You can do everything through config. Provide the metadata.
Mm-hmm.
Make scopes. I don't know if we didn't talk about scopes here in this discussion.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about them. And then provide endpoints over which discovery will happen. All of that can be done through config, right, on the service end.
Okay.
And we're looking to improve that functionality on the client end also.
All right. So since you brought up scopes, mm-hmm. what's a scope?
Great that you ask.
Okay.
So we talked about how a client was discovering a service, mm-hmm. and one of the ways we mentioned was a service type, which is what the lab used, right?
Okay.
And the next thing that the lab used, another thing that the lab actually can use, I don't know if it does right now, but you can use scopes to further fine-tune your search criteria.
Okay.
And what it is, a scope is nothing but a URI.
Okay.
It can be an LDAP URI, it can be a HTTP URL,
okay.
Can be a path, it can be a GUID, any URI. Right?
Okay.
And you can provide that URI from your client end as part of your find criteria, right?
Ah.
So when you're looking for a service, you provide a find criteria that in which defines the type of service you're looking for. And so you can say, I'm looking for ChatWow, other ChatWow users, but I don't really care about all the ChatWow users in the network. I only care about the ChatWow users in my hallway.
Okay.
And the ChatWow users in my hallway are going to be the ones that have fall under a certain LDAP query, right? It's going to be, you know, organization equals Microsoft, you know, blah, 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 building equals 200 and floor equals 1 or something like that. Right?
Ah, gotcha.
So you provide that URI as part of your find criteria.
Okay.
What that does is when it goes out, a service can look at that when it gets that information and say, oh, do I match this URI?
Mm-hmm.
If I match this URI, then I'll respond back. If I don't, I won't respond back.
Oh, so you can, that's interesting.
You can easily tune the way your discovery happens.
So you could use this to group services in a variety of ways, maybe by location or, I don't know, by business unit.
Yep.
By, and maybe version. This would be another version technique, right? So you could have the version 1 URI, the version 10 URI, or whatever, right? Ah, okay. So that's really cool.
Yep.
Now, So that's pretty interesting, and really, when people think about servers and servers coming up and down, right? You compose discovery though with how does that compose with like a server farm? Like I got a router out here, like some kind of HTTP load balancer device, and a whole bunch of servers in a farm. You know, I don't need to discover one of those servers. If I'm sending a message, I'm sending to the load balancer, right? How does that work?
A really simple solution, actually.
Yeah.
Put a discovery proxy out there. And, a discovery proxy will respond back to the client based on its query, right? So when the client sends a query to the discovery proxy, instead of giving the endpoints of the servers that are behind the load balancer, it'll just provide the endpoint of the load balancer itself.
Oh, okay.
And then now your load balancer itself is discoverable.
Good. Okay. Well, so that would make sense. And then the load balancer itself knows when these various units go up and down, so it's going to take care of that.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So that's very cool. Well, this is exciting stuff. It's coming in .NET 4.
Yep.
Right. It's definitely there. We got it in beta 1 already, and a few more things coming in beta 2. I don't know. Is there anything you can leak out? Maybe. I shouldn't ask. I don't want to put you on the spot. But, you never know, right? There could be some cool stuff. I know you're thinking about it.
There's definitely cool stuff that's coming up.
Okay.
And,
more to come. We'll say it that way.
There's definitely more to come.
Okay. Yes. All right. So we'll be looking for that. There'll be updates to ChatWow.
There's definitely updates to ChatWow.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks so much for joining me today.
No problem. It was great. It was my pleasure.
All right. We'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.